the headlines this hour. The death toll from the recent earthquakes in Turkey and Syria rises to above 19,000 as search and rescue operations are still underway. President Raisi praises Iran's glorious achievements since the 1979 revolution, despite attempts by arrogant powers to hinder its progress. Also in the headlines, the EU pledges, quote, maximum support for Ukraine as President Zelensky tours around Europe to ask for more weapons. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The death toll from the devastating earthquakes in Turkey and in Syria has climbed to more than 19,000 as the search operation is still underway in the affected regions. According to official figures, more than 16,000 people have died in Turkey, and over 3,160 have been confirmed dead in Syria. The death toll is expected to rise. A Syrian child has been pulled out alive from the rubble after 2 days. On Wednesday, a medical team found a baby alive in the Turkish province of Hatay. Another group of rescuers found four members of the same family alive under the wreckage. Rescue operations remain slow in many areas because of cold weather and a lack of necessary equipment despite the arrival of foreign teams in the two countries. Survivors in southern Turkey and in northern Syria have spent a third night in the freezing cold.
A devastating 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck southeastern Turkey and northwestern Syria early on Monday. The deadly quake and a string of aftershocks have killed thousands of people in both countries and injured more. Hundreds of buildings in both Syria and Turkey have been reduced to rubbles. Rescue workers are still working in freezing temperatures to find those still trapped under debris. While Turkey has been aided by its allies and Western partners to cope with the crisis, aid is trickling to sanctions-hit Syria. Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad has highlighted Syria's need for humanitarian assistance, warning that the US sanctions have worsened the circumstances as the illegal bans have prevented the delivery of everything to the country. The catastrophe of the earthquake that struck Syria is great, and what has increased its depth is the difficult circumstances that the country has been going through for the past 12 years as it's fighting terrorism and its supporters. What exacerbated the tragedy and catastrophe was the sanctions imposed by the United States and Western countries on Syria. The Syrian top diplomat further said that Damascus had appealed to the member states of the United Nations, the General Secretariat of the organization, its relevant agencies and funds, the International Committee of the Red Cross and other humanitarian action partners from international, governmental and non-governmental organizations to extend a helping hand and support Syria's efforts to confront the crisis.
You know, given that the war situation and economic, financial, unilateral, illegal, unilateral, inhumane Western sanctions imposed on Syria, at the same time when the U.S. Is imposing, and with its Western allies, imposing almost a blockade around Syria.
Calls are now getting louder on Western nations to lift their sanctions on Syria in a bid to expedite rescue operations. The Syrian Red Crescent has appealed to Western countries to provide aid to help the Arab country deal with the aftermath of devastating earthquakes. Syria is also grappling with the years of foreign-backed insurgency, which has devastated the country.
As Syria is reeling from the aftermath of the deadly earthquakes, the United States is working with partners to provide earthquake relief in Syria, but will stand firm against working with Syria's legitimate government headed by President Bashar al-Assad. The United States has refused normalization of relations with the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad or any direct reconstruction aid.
Lots of the airplane, cargo airplane, refused to land on Syrian airports because of the American and European sanctions. So even those countries who want to send humanitarian assistance, they cannot use the airplane cargo because of the sanctions.
Washington listed Syria as a state sponsor of terrorism in 1979, but since the beginning of the imposed war on Syria in 2011, the United States and its Western allies have imposed a number of economic sanctions and restrictions on Syria. U.S. sanctions intensified with the passing of the CISA Act in 2019, which was signed by former President Donald Trump. The sanctions have severely affected the Syrian economy, especially its construction, finance and energy sectors, and complicated the reconstruction effort.
The hurdles we have, if I talk about the area under government control, we don't have an access problem in terms of authorizations, but we have an access problem in terms of the capacity of the infrastructure to authorize that, to enable us to do it. I mean, this means we might have to repair a few roads here and there. And we are not the only one. The government is also working on that. But we are in a situation where it was already difficult to do that before. And now we're in a situation where we don't have any other option than doing it.
Syria has been in the throes of foreign-backed militancy since March 2011. While the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group was crushed by the Syrian government, militant outfits continue to hold sway in some parts of the country under the patronage of Western powers. The United States has also established several military bases in northern Syria in a bid to help the terrorists there. Meanwhile, Iran has sent several batches of humanitarian aid to Syria to help the Arab country deal with the aftermath of the devastating earthquakes. The latest batch of aid included food, blankets, and carpets. Iran will send more humanitarian supplies to Syria in the coming days. Iran has urged the international community to put pressure on the US to lift its cruel sanctions on Syria to facilitate aid deliveries. The Lebanese Hezbollah resistance movement has also sent convoys of humanitarian aid to earthquake-affected areas in Syria.
The UN Special Envoy for Syria says the Arab country is in desperate need of everything in terms of aid to pull through the impacts of the devastating earthquake. Geir Pedersen called for assurances that there would be no political hindrances to getting aid to where it was most needed. Curbs imposed by the U.S. and its Western allies have complicated international efforts to assist quake-hit Syrians. The U.S. has so far refused to lift the sanctions, despite repeated calls from Damascus and the international community.
Seeing the wall crack this badly, I'm scared, so I will continue to spend the night in the park, no matter how cold it is, rainy, snowy, or even a tsunami here in Aleppo. My children and I would rather live in the park instead of being buried. I thought I could make a simple temporary tent, so I bought some nylon ropes and plastic sheets tied to iron columns so that there will be less of a cold wind when my children slept.
Relief supply shortages in Syria are forcing many survivors of Monday's devastating earthquake to spend nights in freezing temperatures. Scores of people are left homeless and risk illness and other problems. Essential humanitarian relief items like tents are not available. The natural disaster has multiplied the tragedy that Syrians have been going through for over a decade due to the foreign-backed militancy and Western sanctions. President Ibrahim Raisi says Iran has made glorious achievements since the 1979 revolution, despite attempts by arrogant powers to get in the way of its progress. The Iranian president said that the rapid scientific progress and political development based on a religious democratic system were among those achievements. Raisi was addressing foreign ambassadors in Tehran ahead of the revolution's 44th anniversary. He said that arrogant powers cannot stand Iran's progress and take every opportunity to roughen Iran's path of success. The president underscored Western support for Iraq during the imposed war of the 1980s and massive sanctions on the Islamic Republic. Raisi said that Iran has shown good faith in its nuclear dispute with the West and is ready for a fair agreement on reviving the JCPOA, despite the West's vague promises. The Iranian president said, quote, under illusion, the West has made miscalculations in recent months.
It's unfortunate that Washington and the three European governments are under illusion and make miscalculations. They have been working to interfere in Iran's affairs instead of returning to their commitments under the JCPOA. Over the past months, we have been witnessing a new wave of complex designs by certain Western countries to meddle in Iran's domestic affairs, acting on false analysis and information provided by enemies of the Iranian nation. These countries put themselves in front of the resilient and proud Iranian nation. They launched one of the clearest examples of cognitive and hybrid wars against the Islamic Republic in recent months. During the recent riots, they provided totally incorrect information on the condition of women and Iran's internal developments and made utmost efforts to tarnish Iran's image in the international arena.
The president also said the West continues to create a toxic media environment around Iran. Raisi said that such efforts are doomed to fail and the Islamic Revolution will continue to walk the path of independence, freedom, and progress. Washington's anti-Tehran positions once again come to light as it announces fresh Iran-related sanctions. The U.S. Treasury Department said it has imposed sanctions on six Iran-based petrochemical manufacturers and their subsidiaries and three firms in Malaysia and Singapore. It said the sanctions were in response to the uproar in the production, sale, and shipment of Iranian petrochemicals and petroleum to buyers in Asia. The measures toe the line of the former U.S. government's maximum pressure policy to bring Iran's oil exports to zero. Nonetheless, data from companies that track the oil flows show that Iranian oil exports have hit new highs in the last 2 months of 2022. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran has criticized the U.N. nuclear watchdog for the leakage of information about the country's nuclear program. Mohammad Islami expressed regret over what he called the IAEA's unprofessional behavior. He reminded that Iran is interacting with the agency through the safeguards agreement. The Iranian nuclear chief also pointed out that his country has always been committed to the non-proliferation treaty and only seeks the nuclear technology for peaceful purposes. Islami made it clear that Iran would return to its commitments under the 2015 deal when other parties to the JCPOA fulfilled their obligations. On Wednesday, the IAEA accused Iran of some modifications at a nuclear site in a leaked report. Tehran rejected the report, calling it incorrect interpretation by an IAEA inspector, who also realized his error of judgment after Iran's explanation. Iranian and Russian TV channels are set to boost bilateral cooperation. In a meeting with the head of the IRIB World Service, a delegation of Russian television executives discussed practical measures to strengthen partnership. Gisu Mishahmedi has the details.
In line with the fourth meeting of Iran and Russia media cooperation, a delegation of Russian television executives, as well as TV and radio station managers, led by the Russian Deputy Minister of Digital Affairs, visited the IRIB World Service's TV and radio stations. That included the Spanish channel Hispan TV and the English news network Press TV, a chance for the Russian delegation to observe the technical developments up close.
Both the Russian and the Iranian side have reached a point where they are ready for practical steps after holding several rounds of meetings and signing cooperation agreements. We have laid the groundwork, and our audience will soon be enjoying our joint TV and radio productions.
The visit also provided the opportunity to discuss potential areas of cooperation.
We can cooperate in exchange of content. It's movies, TV series, it's cartoons and documentaries. There is a very broad field.
The details were carefully discussed in order to break down the steps and see how the two sides can take cooperation to the next level. First and foremost, representatives were appointed from both sides to be directly in touch and to be in charge of joint media productions from now on.
Iran and Russia are both under pressure and sanctions by Western countries, so this meeting and the one we had 2 days ago are of strategic importance. There is great potential, and I believe that we can immediately begin joint radio production.
But the highlight of this meeting was how to neutralize Western sanctions, particularly in the field of media, with the Iranian side sharing its valuable experiences in this regard.
We are witnessing a new world order, and under these circumstances, regional and international powers such as Russia, Iran, and China will be growing closer and develop stronger alliances. Russians are experiencing sanctions aimed at isolating them since the war in Ukraine has begun. We can share years of experience with them in this regard. Our media cooperation not only allows unheard voices to be heard, but it will also reshape public opinion.
Both sides agree that the groundwork has prepared and joint production can start in 2023, marking the beginning of a strategic alliance in a multipolar world where all voices can be heard. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
The European Union pledges more assistance for Ukraine in its war efforts as the conflict rages on in the battlefield.
We are well aware that the next few weeks and months will probably be decisive. This is not the time to tremble. This is the time to be lucid, and this is the time to deploy maximum support.
He said the EU has realized Kiev's needs and will now work to provide them. Shell also said it would be fair to use Russia's frozen assets to rebuild Ukraine. Meanwhile, the European Commission's chief Ursula von der Leyen said the EU's new sanctions will include export bans worth over 10 billion euros. Von der Leyen said that the sanctions will target, quote, Russian propagandists. Ukraine's president is on a European tour to press allies to deliver modern weapons to Kiev.
Ukraine needs such opportunities. We need artillery guns, shells for them, modern tanks, long-range missiles, modern aviation. I'm grateful to everyone who provides such armed assistance. We have to enhance the dynamics of our cooperation. We have to do it faster than the aggressor.
Zelensky said negotiations concerning long-range weapons are going forward, but he said he could not publicize all elements of the talks. The Ukrainian president was speaking in a joint press conference with the EU Commission chief and the head of the European Council. Earlier, Zelensky met with the French president and the German chancellor in Paris for more arms delivery. Zelensky has also visited London, where he urged the British prime minister to send fighter jets to Ukraine. Russia has warned the UK and Kiev's Western allies against any such moves. Moscow says it will have serious military and political consequences for the world. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Epic. Glory. Honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
In the limelight.
With the discovery of some highly confidential and sensitive documents from U.S. President Joe Biden's former private office and his home in Wilmington, Delaware, once again concerns about endangering American national security have increased. The majority of the American people expressed concern that the secret documents that Biden and former President Donald Trump illegally kept in their homes could potentially endanger some sources and methods of the American intelligence community. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. NBC News has covered this story and tells us more. A new survey has found that Americans are equally concerned about classified documents found in possession of President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump, even though the current and former presidents have handled their situations differently. An opinion poll released recently says 67% of respondents said they find the discovery of the Biden documents either very concerning or somewhat concerning, while an identical 67% held the same views about the discovery of the Trump documents. More than a dozen classified documents have been found at Joe Biden's residence and private office, while over 300 classified documents were recovered from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida. Joe Biden and his lawyers claim they have so far cooperated with the Justice Department and allowed authorities to search his Wilmington, Delaware home, where six additional classified documents were found. However, Donald Trump resisted handing over the documents despite repeated requests from the National Archives and a subpoena, leading a judge to issue a warrant authorizing the FBI to search Mar-a-Lago in Florida. According to the survey, 50% of the respondents disapprove of Joe Biden's job performance, compared to 45% who approve. The survey also found that Americans are also concerned that the handling of the classified documents by Biden is consuming Republican members of Congress. 55% of respondents said they believe House Republicans spend too much time investigating Biden rather than focusing on other priorities. 54% of respondents said they believe Republicans will be too inflexible in their investigations. In the wake of the discovery of the documents in both Biden's and Trump's possession, the Justice Department told the Senate Intelligence Committee that it was actively working to brief lawmakers about the potential risk to national security. Assistant Attorney General Carlos Uriarte wrote in a letter to a number of senators that prosecutors on both matters are actively working to enable sharing information with the committee. However, both Republican and Democratic senators voiced frustration after they left a recent closed-door briefing with National Intelligence Director Avril Haines, who declined to show them copies of the classified documents. The Sputnik News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a Redfield and Wilton Strategies poll, a total of 43% of U.S. citizens believe the classified documents that were found in President Joe Biden's home and former office were probably deliberately kept by him and or his staff. Meanwhile, 34% of those sampled think that the classified documents were kept there probably mistakenly, with another 23% undecided. The opinion poll also found that 32% of the respondents believe the story has been overblown. A further 65% of those polled are in favor of searches of all of Biden's properties by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. The survey was conducted from 28th to 29th of January among 1,500 eligible voters. On 9th of January, U.S. media reported that Joe Biden's personal attorneys discovered 10 classified documents pertaining to Ukraine, Iran, and the United Kingdom at his think tank's office, prompting a federal probe into the matter. Several new packages of classified official papers have been discovered in Joe Biden's personal home in Wilmington, Delaware, since then. The U.S. Department of Justice is investigating how classified documents relating to the period of Biden's vice presidency ended up in office and residential premises not authorized for their storage. Republican House members have charged U.S. authorities of hypocrisy when it comes to the handling of the classified documents by President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump after leaving office. Representative James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, the newly appointed chairman of the House Oversight and Accountability Committee, recently called Biden's Delaware residence a crime scene. James Comer said, "My concern is that the special counsel was called for, but yet hours after that, we still had the president's personal attorneys who have no security clearance still rummaging around the president's residence, looking for things. I mean, that would essentially be a crime scene, so to speak, after the appointment of a special counsel." Republicans have criticized the response of U.S. authorities to the discovery, calling it hypocritical that Donald Trump's home was raided for the documents where Joe Biden's was not. Representative James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, said, "Joe Biden used as his closing argument during the midterm elections that Republicans were a threat to democracy, and he cited the fact that President Trump mishandled the classified documents. While he was doing this, he knew very well that he himself had possession of classified documents." He added, "So the hypocrisy here is great. We're very concerned about a lack of transparency. We're very concerned, as I have said many times, about a two-tiered system of justice in America. And we just want equal treatment. And hopefully we will get some answers very soon." The Associated Press has also covered the same story. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, has conducted a search of U.S. President Joe Biden's beach house in Rehoboth, Delaware, as part of a probe into his handling of classified documents. On Wednesday, 1st of February, search by FBI agents is part of an investigation to track down more improperly stored classified documents. Joe Biden's personal attorney, Bob Bauer, claimed the search was planned with the president's support. It was carried out without advance public notice in the interest of operational security and integrity. Joe Biden's personal lawyer, Bob Bauer, said the U.S. Justice Department did not find documents with classified markings during the 3.5-hour search of Joe Biden's house, but did take some materials for further review. According to Reuters news agency, classified materials were previously found at his home in Wilmington, Delaware, and at a Washington office, which he used during the time between his service as vice president under Barack Obama and his presidential election. The new probe is part of a wider investigation into the discovery of a trove of classified materials in Joe Biden's private office and the Florida residence of former President Donald Trump. Records from each administration are supposed to be turned over during a presidential transition period. It is unlawful to knowingly remove or retain classified material. The Justice Department has appointed a special counsel to investigate Joe Biden and Donald Trump's handling of sensitive government documents as they're both preparing for the 2024 election. Assistant Attorney General Carlos Uriarte wrote in a letter to a number of senators that prosecutors on both matters are actively working to enable sharing information with the committee.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Imam Khomeini brought dignity to the Ummah. I'm going to mention some of the lessons that we get from this man. It's important for us to remember these blessings of Allah. And then finally to see, well, what was his legacy for us? And how do we slowly take steps to become like Imam Khomeini? So what did Imam Khomeini do for us? There are certain values, Islamic values, Islamic principles. What Imam Khomeini did was he made those values, he revived them. They were there before. I'm going to mention the ayat, I'll mention the hadith. They were there before. But then Imam Khomeini embodied them. He stood for them. What before was a discussion, what before was theory, what was before in the books, it's different when we saw it enacted. Once we saw it enacted, it was then easy to emulate. They have a saying that they say in Farsi, that once you've fixed a puzzle, once you've fixed it, something was a mystery, something was a puzzle, once it's complete, once it's over, then it's easy. The challenge is to bring it to life. And that's what Imam Khomeini did. I'm going to give some examples. For instance, Islam teaches us, Islam of Rasulullah, Islam teaches us that Islam is supreme. The supremacy of Islam. Not that we want to sit at the table. Not that our whole hope is to stop Islamophobia so that we can just be treated like human beings. No, Islam is supreme. Hadith. Al-Islamu ya'lu wa la yu'la alayhi. Islam is supreme to everything. And nothing is better than Islam. Islamic principle. Taught by Rasulullah. What happened? Some brothers and sisters, some of you are younger. You don't remember the days before Imam Khomeini. What did Imam Khomeini do? How did he change history? What were we like before? Why are we so close to the victory once we went back and embraced our Islamic principles? Remember, they had divided the world into two. They were the mustadhafin, the weaklings, those who would get bullied, those who would be trampled, those who would be taken advantage of. And then there were the first world, the true leaders. Some people, people like you and us, some people had accepted being third class from the third world, second class citizens. Used to having people talk down to them and being treated like animals. This had happened before Imam Khomeini. Things are different now. You and I will never go stand for that. But how did it start? I want to give you some examples. Because what we were doing was seeing the Imam do this, and then we saw our own strength. One example. This example, context is important. The imposed war is over. 200,000 shuhada. Iran didn't apparently, it didn't end the way that they wanted. Right? And the end of the war, it didn't end the way that it wanted. It was World War III. And Iran had resisted for 8 years. Finally, for certain reasons, Imam determined that this is the responsibility. And he said that now we're going to have a peace treaty. Imam wrote a letter to the leader of then one of the kingmakers. It was the Soviet Union at that time. There were two main powers, one America, one the Soviet Union. Imam wrote a letter to Gorbachev. And in that letter, he wrote him and he explained to him about changing his whole way of life and thinking. Imam Khomeini, right? From the other way, the third world, second-class citizens, and Imam Khomeini is giving him this elite advice, special advice. This is a video, you can see it. So what happened? So now, the Imam Khomeini is sitting there, and the representative of Gorbachev comes. And Imam Khomeini has written that important letter. Imam Khomeini is sitting there, important advice. Imam Khomeini is listening through an interpreter. And he sees that the man tries to give the normal formalities. They haven't taken the letter of Imam Khomeini seriously. Right there in the session, Imam Khomeini tells that man, he said, I tried to introduce you guys to the higher realities. He starts to scold him. He says, I knew you guys wouldn't get it. And then right there, Imam Khomeini gets up, you should see the video, you see the foreign minister. He just gets, he doesn't even shake the hand of the Taghut, just walks out. Al-Islamu ya'lu, wa la yu'la alayh. Islam is supreme. I'm advising you. When you see somebody like that, then they give strength, dignity, karama, standing for the truth. Kufr to the Taghut is a fundamental, these ayat of the Quran, a fundamental principle in Islam. But we needed to see it enacted. What does God say in the Quran? We all have this ayat memorized. فَمَنْ يَكْفُرْ بِالْتَاغُوتِ, the person who does kufr to the taghut, وَيُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ, and believes in Allah, فَقَدْ اسْتَمْسَكَ بِالْعُرْوَةِ الْوُثْقَى, this person is holding fast to the firmest handle. We all heard before that Abu Abdullah taught us kufr to the taghut. He taught us. He said this. وَمِثْلِي لَا يُبَايِعُ مِثْلَهُ. Someone like Hussein will never make bay'ah to someone like Yazid. Never. Strength of Islam. Imam Khomeini. Again, I want to show you, tell you a story. This is from the beginning. The life of Imam Khomeini needs to be studied. From the beginning. The revolution needs to be studied. The 15 years he was in exile need to be studied. How difficult it was. The dark times. That needs to be studied. It gives hope, brothers and sisters. Now, Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini at this time, this is in the beginning of the revolution. The Shah had his commandos storm a school, a hauza, Faithiya, next to the shrine of Hazrat Ma'asuma. He had them storm that school. They attacked the unarmed hauza students. They were flinging them off the roof. It was complete destruction. Commandos! A few days later, Imam Khomeini gave a fiery speech. You see, the head of the SAVAK, and some of you have heard from me a little bit about the SAVAK, the intelligence organization that was the muscle behind the Shah, and how savage they were to the brothers and sisters, the Mu'mineen and Mu'minat. What did they do to them? At that time, the head of the SAVAK was a monster named Colonel Molevi. He was the person who personally had the commandos go in there and do all that destruction, throwing those people off the rooftops. Imam Khomeini, when he gave his fiery speech, he mentioned Molevi, the colonel. But he didn't want to mention his name, as if he was too najis to even mention his name. He said, I won't even mention the name of that person. He said, unless I give the order for them to cut his ears off. Cut his ears off, not literally cut his ears off. In Iran, and they're going to teach you a good lesson. Imam Khomeini with no power. This is the beginning of the revolution. They're being crushed. They're throwing them off the rooftops. This is the beginning. Strength. Kufr to the Taghut. Imam Khomeini sitting there in front of the students. He said, no, I won't mention that man's name unless I give the command for them to cut his ears off. 2 days later, the Savak come and they arrest Imam Khomeini. They take Imam Khomeini into solitary confinement. So Imam Khomeini now solitary in confinement. And now that they're completely in control, the same monster who led the attack, Colonel Moulavi, he comes to the prison cell. Imam Khomeini, solitary, no help, no support. So he thinks now Imam Khomeini is broken. He comes to Imam Khomeini, he said, "Agha, have you given the command to cut anybody's ears recently?" Imam Khomeini looked him up, looked dead into his eyes. He said, "It's still not too late for me to give the command." Imam Khomeini was his bravery, brothers and sisters, some of us, we weren't a lot, legendary. Legendary, this man. The focus of Imam Khomeini, brothers and sisters, was on building human pillars.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahim Karim Azim Alim Halim Hakim Mateen Ghafur Shakur Wadud Qayyim محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the United States, New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu said on Sunday, 5th of February, he doesn't think former President Donald Trump could beat President Joe Biden in a 2024 rematch. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The Hill has covered this story and tells us more. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, two prominent moderate figures in the Republican Party, both predicted on Sunday, 5th of February, that former President Donald Trump could not beat President Joe Biden if they were in a rematch for the White House in 2024. Both men are facing skepticism from their own parties, with Democrats calling Joe Biden too old to run for re-election and Republicans expressing desire to see another candidate to be their GOP nominee. An ABC Washington Post poll conducted over the last week showed that there was little enthusiasm for a rematch between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, with many voters in both parties hoping for a different choice. Donald Trump is expected to face opposition from a number of other candidates in the GOP, but Joe Biden has yet to garner any formal opposition from another Democratic candidate. When asked on ABC's This Week program by co-anchor Jonathan Karl whether Trump could beat Biden, Chris Christie said, "I don't think so." Governor Chris Sununu also said no when asked the same question early on the show, saying he thinks the former president Donald Trump would be seen as too extreme. No, Trump is going to be seen as a very extreme candidate. The country is going to push back against it, Sununu said. He could get the nomination, but he can't get it done. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu is mulling a White House bid of his own. Chris Christie ran for president in 2016, but ended his campaign in February of that year after losing the New Hampshire primary. He then endorsed Donald Trump and advised his campaign to do the same. Chris Christie has since shared regular criticisms of Donald Trump since the former president left office. He also argued that other Republican candidates may be hesitant to declare their intent to run because no one wants to be at the center of attacks by Donald Trump. Who wants to be the first in the poll with Donald Trump, Christie said, when he has no one else to shoot at, and his whole life is about shooting at people. The website politico.com has also covered this story and tells us more. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu said on Sunday he doesn't think former President Donald Trump could beat President Joe Biden in a 2024 rematch. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, November of 2022 showed us that, right? Trump is going to be seen as a very extreme candidate. The country is going to push back against it, the Republican governor said. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, speaking on ABC's This Week program, was responding to a question about a new Washington Post ABC poll that showed Donald Trump ahead of Joe Biden when it comes to the 2024 election. Sununu was not persuaded by those numbers. It can't get done. He could get the nomination, but he can't get it done, Sununu said of the former president. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, who offered pointed criticisms of Joe Biden's handling of the economy, said Republicans need to nominate the most electable conservative that they can find. He said that a solid GOP field was shaping up and that he was also thinking about it when it comes to entering the race himself. Definitely thinking about it, having those conversations, Sununu said, but at the end of the day, you're going to have a lot of Republicans that get in that race. They're all really good people. They're really good candidates. You have Nikki Haley and Mike Pompeo and Governor Ron DeSantis and a lot of folks who are going to get in. Speaking later on the same program, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie agreed with Chris Sununu that Donald Trump was unlikely to defeat Joe Biden. I don't think so, he said during a panel discussion. The Washington Post ABC poll gave Donald Trump a 48-44 edge over Joe Biden, but it also showed that a majority of Democrats do not want Joe Biden to be the Democratic nominee in 2024 and that a plurality of Republicans feel the same way about Donald Trump. The opinion poll released 2 days before Joe Biden's State of the Union address was conducted between 27th of January and 1st of February, among a national sample of 1,003 U.S. adults and has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.5 percentage points. The Business Insider has also covered this story and tells us more. New Hampshire Republican Governor Chris Sununu on Sunday said former President Donald Trump won't be able to defeat President Joe Biden in a potential 2024 matchup, arguing that the former commander-in-chief would be seen as an extreme candidate. During an interview on ABC's This Week program, Chris Sununu was frank with journalist Jonathan Karl when asked about his thoughts on Donald Trump's prospects should the former president win the GOP nomination for the White House next year. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, November of 2022 showed us that, right? Trump is going to be seen as a very extreme candidate. The country is going to push back against it, the governor said. On Sunday, 5th of February, a newly released Washington Post ABC News poll showed Donald Trump narrowly leading Joe Biden 48% to 44% among registered voters, with Democrats overwhelmingly backing the president and Republicans firmly behind the former president. The results showed Donald Trump with a 50% to a 41% lead among independents, which helped give him a slight edge in the survey. Still, the governor, Chris Sununu, was not convinced that Donald Trump would be truly competitive with Joe Biden next year. Just look at the results of 3 months ago, and that shows you where extreme candidates are going to end up falling. It can't get done, he told Jonathan Carl. He could get the Republican nomination, but he can't get the job done. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, who has been critical of Joe Biden's presidency, said that GOP voters need to nominate the most conservative candidate who can win a general election. The governor, who was elected to his fourth term in office last November, told Jonathan Carl that he was still mulling a presidential campaign of his own. I'm definitely thinking about it, having those conversations, but at the end of the day, you're going to have a lot of Republicans that get into that race, he said. They're all really good people. They're all really good candidates. You have Nikki Haley and Mike Pompeo and Governor Ron DeSantis, and a lot of folks are going to get in. At the moment, Donald Trump remains the only declared major candidate in the race, while Nikki Haley is set to enter the contest later on this month.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The second phase of the revolution statement addressed to the Iranian nation.
on the occasion of the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. In the name of God, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful, all praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master and Prophet, Abul Qasim al-Muhammad al-Mustafa, upon his pure and immaculate household, upon his chosen companions, and upon those who follow them in charity until the Day of Judgment. Among all the nations suffering from oppression, few make an effort to launch a revolution. And among those nations that have risen and launched a revolution, few have been witnessed to have pursued it to the end, or moved beyond merely changing the government and safeguarded their revolutionary values. However, the auspicious revolution of the Iranian nation, which is the greatest and most popular revolution of the contemporary era, is the sole revolution that has persisted 40 years of pride, safe from betrayal to its values, and it has preserved its dignity and original slogans against all the temptations which seemed irresistible. Hence, entering the second phase of the self-development, society processing, and civilization building.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Heartfelt salutations to this nation, the generation who initiated and continued the movement, and the generation that currently steps into the magnificent and global phenomenon of the second 40 years. The day when the world was divided into material West and East, and no one presumed a major religious movement would emerge, the Islamic Revolution of Iran stepped into the scene gloriously and mightily. It broke the frameworks. It flaunted to the world the outdatedness of its clichés. It put the religion and the material world together and declared the coming of a new era. It was much expected that the leaders of deviation and oppression would react, but in vain. Whatever the right and left modernity did, from pretending to ignore this emerging and unprecedented voice to extensive efforts for suffocating it, just brought them closer to their indispensable demise. Today, after 40 annual celebrations of the victory of the revolution and more than 40 Fajr 10 days, one of the two centers of animosity has already perished, and the second one is struggling with its predicaments that signal its death in the near future. Whereas the Islamic Revolution is advancing while preserving and adhering to its mottos.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.